Well, all of those readings today are from this week's lectionary. So we're kind of right in line with the rest of the world, the rest of the UCC and other churches today. And it's all a bit dark, if you listen to it, a little bit of a downer, or so it seems. So it seems. Beginning with our responsive reading today, right there in your program. And that's from King David and the 22nd Psalm. The psalm starts out right there with verse 1, sounding very familiar to everybody, doesn't it? But it's familiar from an entirely different part of the Bible, something that occurred 1,000 years after David. My God, why have you forsaken me? Who does that bring to mind? Jesus, right. It brings to mind Jesus on the cross. Yeah, yep. This quote by Jesus, he's quoting David in the Psalms, in extreme anguish, is included in both the Gospels of Matthew and Mark. And he's quoting David, as I said. He was very familiar, of course, with the Gospels, with the Old Testament, which would have been his Bible. And that is a psalm, the 22nd Psalm, a psalm of lament, as many of the psalms are. And consider this. When Jesus uttered those words, he had been hanging on the cross for 6 hours at that point, from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. in the afternoon, nails through his hands and his feet. He had already previously been flogged severely. And just imagine that. He is all ripped up, right? And hanging there, stretched out for 6 hours. Probably felt longer. It probably felt worse than that. But that's what he was enduring. But here's the worst thing of all. I think the worst thing for Jesus and the thing he dreaded the most was this. He had to experience, for the first time ever, as far as we know, Jesus had to experience separation from the Father. Now, we've talked about this before, usually on Good Friday or around Good Friday. Jesus dreaded this the most, separation from the Father, the feeling of being forsaken by God. Jesus had to experience that to really, really feel it. But why? Why? Because he had to experience hell. He had to feel it so that he would then come down from that cross and conquer it, defeat it, harrow it, we say, right? He had to experience hell and then harrow it so that you and I never would have to. Ultimately, that was the mission. My God, why have you forsaken me? The feeling was real. But was it true? Was Jesus really forsaken, abandoned forever, that's what that means, by God the Father? No, but it sure felt that way. It sure felt that way. And for Jesus, and sometimes for us, that pain is worse than physical pain. But we can know, we are able to know that it's not real. We are never forsaken by God, abandoned forever. That's the promise of the gospel. The promise, repeated and clear, of salvation through grace. Salvation through grace. The Bible makes it very clear. You can't earn your way into heaven. And oh, by the way, that's not what you should be trying to do. Anyway. Okay, now that gets some people a little upset to say that. They'll say, what do you mean? That's all we should be worrying about. Getting ourselves into heaven. Really? Really? Why do we have to worry about that? That's his job. Let him worry about it. Salvation is no one else's job but his. It's not your job, and it's not mine. Again, there's a lot of things in the Bible that are not super clear, but that one is. That one is clear. All authority regarding salvation has been given to the Son. Period. He conquered hell. Do we believe that? I think so. And he's in charge of salvation. Do we believe that? I sure hope so. And he's told us what to do and how to live in the here and now, what we should be doing. Loving and serving each other. That's what we should be doing. And I'm not saying it's easy, and I'm definitely not saying I'm good at it, but that's what he told us to do, whether you like it or not. And the catch is, sort of the trick of it is, that doing that well, living well, in the here and now, in the physical world, absolutely requires us to be well grounded in the spiritual world, to be connected to God. It's a mysterious secret to life, for human beings at least. When we lose the connection to God, we lose the ability to live well. And what is the number one thing that stands between us and our connection with God? What's the biggest obstacle? You must be thinking it. Human pride. Oh, yeah. We talk about it all the time, right? That's the biggest obstacle. Human pride. Okay. And that is when we turn briefly to our old friend Job from our first reading today. Heard from Julie. Now, everybody talks about what? The patience of Job, right? That's what you hear. That's sort of the bumper sticker, you know, takeaway from the book of Job. But that would suggest that this long book, and it's a long one, it's a long book, is a lesson in the great virtue of Job, his fabulous patience. But I contend, and you've heard me say this before, that this book is actually primarily a lesson about the pridefulness of Job. Throughout the entire long book, Job is talking and complaining, and for the most part, he's talking about how great he is, how innocent, how upright, how mighty, these are all words he uses, how blameless he is. He even talks about his own glory, not God's glory, his glory. And who is Job talking to the entire time, throughout the entire book? Not to God. Nope. He's talking through the entire book to his friends. He doesn't talk to God. You almost don't realize it, but you can go back and check me on that. He's disconnected from God. Why? Because of his pride, his wealth and his pride. And as a result, his life becomes terrible. For Job, pride did indeed come before and during the fall. But then mercifully, God gives him a thorough dressing down in chapter 40 and 41, the end of the book. And then finally, in the very last chapter of the book, the very last chapter, chapter 42, Job at last talks to God. The first time. And he repents and becomes humble in a healthy way. In a healthy way. And his connection to God is restored. And his life is renewed. It's a happy ending. That's good. And that's the lesson of Job. That's the lesson. Quick question. Was Job ever really forsaken by God? No. The problem was his wealth and his pride. That was the disconnect. And that's the story, the real story of Job. Okay. And this lesson, this concept, is further beautifully and brilliantly demonstrated in a metaphor by the greatest teacher who ever lived. Julian, that's not me. No. Man named Jesus Christ, right? In our gospel reading today, we heard it from Julie. In Mark chapter 10, Jesus starts out with a very disturbing comment. He says it would be easier for a camel, right, to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich person, someone like Job, right, to enter the kingdom of God, to have a connection with God, like Job did not. Okay, wow. I mean, did Jesus really mean that? Well, let's digress for a minute. Little trivia for you, Linda. We all know what the eye of a needle is, right? Think so? Do we? Oh, see, some people think it's a gate. Some people think it's referring to a gate around the city of Jerusalem. Some people think that. Do we think that? Maybe. Possible. That's a good theory. Let me ask you this. Most of us think that it's, what's an eye of a needle? It's that little hole in a sewing needle. Yeah? All right. Here's a question for you. Show of hands. How many people here think that a sewing needle with a little hole in it for the thread, you know, Charlie, existed 2,000 years ago in the time of Jesus? How many people think that existed, such a thing? Nobody? One, two, three, a couple people? Three people, yeah. And the answer is, yes, it absolutely existed. There were lots of them. There were sewing needle makers back then. And in fact, there were probably sewing needles with perfect little holes in them dating back at least 5,000 years and maybe even beyond that, made out of fish bones, bird bones, and bronze, going back a long, long time. You were right, Ron. Way to go. Okay, yeah, so what's the point? Well, Jesus was most likely, there is that theory about the gate, the narrow gate around the city. But Jesus was probably literally but metaphorically talking about the eye of a sewing needle and the notion of a camel trying to get through it. Okay, it's a kind of a pretty cool visual because this is a metaphor. It seems impossible. That's the point, right? It seems impossible. And without God, it absolutely is impossible. That's impossible. But Jesus doesn't end the lesson there with that great metaphor. No, he explains it in verse 27. He says, with man, that is impossible. But with God, all things are possible. And that is why we should never, and I mean never, judge someone else's salvation. That is not our job. That's his job. We are not equipped, and we are definitely not authorized to do it. We are only equipped to see the camel and the eye of the needle and say, well, that's impossible. Jesus is equipped and fully authorized to make it possible, to make all things possible. Now, so in closing, here's a little example for you, a little test. Now, Jerry came up with this for the religious ed class. Now, look at this. Watch this now. Here's a piece of paper. Would you agree, Charlie? This is a piece of paper. Okay. Now, the question is, could you take this piece of paper and a scissors and cut a hole in this piece of paper such that I could fit through it? That's the question. So when we first started to encounter this little exercise, Jerry started reading this to me. I said, well, they must be, clearly, they must be talking about a flip chart piece of paper, right? A bigger piece of paper. We look at, no. They're talking about this piece of paper. Could I take this piece of paper and a scissors and cut it so that I could fit through it, not tearing it? And I tell you, no matter how much, and I believe I could have thought about this for 6 months, no matter how much I thought about it, it absolutely did not seem possible. I couldn't see how it would be possible that I could fit through a hole in it. Now, not Kieran, that's maybe a different story. Me fitting through it. That's a little bit of a, I told you that was coming. I warned him about that. Okay, now, got it? Anybody think that would be possible? Okay, the answer is no. But if you fold it in half and cut it this way and that way just a couple times, this is what happens. You get this. You fold it in half and cut it a couple times, you get this. And it opens up, better work, like this. It opens up like this. And I'm telling you, again, I don't know if Kieran could fit through this, but I fit through this. It fits right over me, and I can absolutely squeeze through this thing. Now, I think that's pretty amazing. I didn't see it, right? How does that look on me, girl? Good? And maybe this is kind of a good reminder that we may not always see it, right? Or feel it or know it. But that doesn't mean it's not true. That doesn't mean it's not possible. And we may sometimes feel forsaken. That doesn't mean we are. And though sometimes something may seem to us impossible, maybe this is a reminder, with God, all things are possible. Amen.